You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Living with others requires patience, tolerance, consideration, and the ability to negotiate and communicate in order to have a happy home. Whether you live with a friend, spouse, boyfriend, a girlfriend, or whoever answered your ad on Craigslist, you can probably use some advice on how to best get along. And you're in luck right now because Philip Galanis is here to help. He's the author of the Social Cues advice column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times. His latest book is Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. And I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show.
Always nice to be here, Leonard.
And we're also taking questions from listeners who need advice. You can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org or give us a call at 212-433-9692. And Philip, I have to pay you the ultimate compliment. I would read Dear Abby and I'd say she got that one wrong. In fact, pretty much every advice columnist. I have yet to feel that you got an answer wrong. Either we're just totally in tune or you're
a genius. I have a feeling, Leonard, it's more likely that we're in total tune than I am a genius, but I appreciate it a lot. If you saw my inboxes most Monday mornings, you would realize that many, many people find fault with my answers every week. Lots of people love them, but lots of people hate them, too.
And do you ever feel, that person was right, that person had a point?
Sometimes I think they do. Sometimes I think they do. And I'm often I go into a scramble about trying to get that good piece of advice to the person who asked the question originally. It's never life or death what I'm doing, which is the good part about it. But it's nice to be able to augment. And there's a tremendous Facebook group, a Social Cues Facebook group, where people are constantly commenting on the column.
Sometimes I'm horrified by some of the questions, and one actually kind of fits in with what we're talking about here, where a man wrote in that his first wife was the real love of his life, and he's married to another woman, but he wants to be buried next to the first wife. And my heart went out to the wife he's lived with for all these years, had children with.
And the way he ended the question was, should I be married with my true love or my second family? And I thought, that is so harsh. But, you know, that was one where people really took me to task because they
said— You were wrong on that?
No, I think I was right. This is one where I do not bend. But I think I was right because, you know, language doesn't lie. And throughout the question, which was really quite long and I had to edit it down, he kept making it clear that he was with sloppy seconds. It was second choice. It was second this. It was second that. And I'm thinking about the conversation that he would have to have to say, P.S. We'll only be needing one urn because I'm otherwise engaged. But people were very, and I got a lot of letters from older folks who had been married for 50 or 60 years, and they said, well, surely this woman that I've been married to for 2 minutes understands that when it comes to burial, I'm going to be with the one who I was with for 50 years. But you know something? I think burials and things like that are really for the people who live after us, not for the people who are dead in the ground with us.
Well, let's get to the topic at hand. Do you get a lot of roommate questions for you, Colin?
We get a lot of roommate questions, a lot. Especially this time of year, especially, we get a ton from new college students who have been living the life of Riley in their, you know, in their home palaces, and then all of a sudden they're sharing a room and two twin beds with somebody who decides to use the hot plate for cooking cabbage dinners or having, you know, some romantic time with his girlfriend in front of you and all that kind of stuff.
Or is a slob.
That is the most common one in the adult roommate category as opposed to the student roommate category. But I think roommates is a terrific relationship to look at because I see it almost like practice for the really important relationships in our lives because these people are they're close by, but they're not exactly close.
Although some of the problems, I would assume, spill over into marriages and
huge,
deeper kinds of relationships. So did you bring any examples?
Oh, I brought a great example that just came in this morning.
This morning? Oh, wow.
Yes.
Because we got a whole bunch from our listeners as well when we announced that you're going to be doing this.
Yeah. The one that came in today is from a woman who lives, she's a college student, a new college student, and her roommate smokes pot. And she is not down with that. She is most definitely not down with that. And she hasn't spoken with her roommate about not being down with that, and instead wanted to know if it would be appropriate to call the authorities on her on her college roommate. And I realized that there was, as silly as the question is, not silly because it's a real problem for this one gal in Massachusetts, but it, as silly as the problem sounded to me, it is a really big reminder that the first response to any problem that you can't let slide is a gentle talk with the person. And I understand this woman has gotten really frustrated over a number of weeks, and she's gotten so frustrated that her head is going to explode and she wants to call the fuzz.
Now, it could be even worse. Her roommate could be a thief and collecting things in their shared room. Could be engaged in other kinds of activities.
Illicit activity.
When do you you suggest a quiet conversation in all cases?
I think in all cases, unless you, I mean, I suppose if she were running a child trafficking organization from Tufts College, that yeah. I'd suggest that she call the dean. But in the vast majority of cases, well, you know, almost, I'd say, when you can't let it slide, you've got to speak up softly.
Now, our listeners have written in. We've got a whole bunch of questions on our show page, and some of them are really troubling. Matt G. asks, what do you do when living with a roommate of the opposite sex, and he says, I have two, you fall in love with one of them?
Yeah, well, that's a really sad question because, well, if you've really fallen in love with one of them, it's not so hard because rent occupancies are where Matt G lives. But if you've really fallen in love with someone and you think that by expressing yourself, a relationship could start, boy, I would value that a heck of a lot higher than a two-bedroom apartment somewhere.
But the proximity does complicate things. It's a lot easier to fall in love with somebody who lives somewhere else, and then at some point you might decide to live together.
In my relationships, in fact, I've been exactly the opposite from Matt G. A little bit of distance, in fact, helps to build the fire as opposed to seeing them trudging out of their bedrooms in the morning as sloppy as I am.
But okay, so let's say he says to her, you know, I really find you very attractive, I'd love to date you, or whatever he would say, and she says no. Well, then they got to live together.
Well, then they've got to live together, which is why in this particular case, I would say a little indirection could be Matt G's friend, and he should say, do you want to get a coffee? And they'll go for a coffee, and then he'll take her to Jules and Jim at the Film Forum, and then he'll suggest something else, and over time he'll be able to start reading some clues coming back at him, and they'll point in the right direction, or the sad, sad fate of people whose love is not requited.
Here's EK left one that is similar to something you suggested earlier. How can I tactfully broach the topic of my roommate's lingering cooking smells? I'm sure what she cooks tastes good and that she doesn't have the same reaction I do to the smell of reused oil, onions, and various spices that persist, in caps, for days throughout the apartment. I can't help resenting
liberal use of caps.
Can't help resenting that I must keep my bedroom door shut in order to preserve some sanctuary of fresh air for myself, and that my hair often picks up the smell in the apartment and thus requires more washing than usual. I should say that we are living together out of necessity and have no previous relationship at risk here, but I would still like to maintain basic civility.
Yeah, so I guess in that particular case, it's about asking the roommate to ventilate better, scented candles. She's certainly entitled to cook. That is, the use of the kitchen is that's a given in a shared space. But you know, and a sautéed onion is not exactly at the far edge of anybody's culinary skills. So do I think that she should be able, that the letter writer should be able to stop her roommate from sautéing an onion? No, I don't think that.
But maybe air freshener?
Maybe an air freshener, maybe opening the window, maybe installing a fan in the window to move things out. But I think, yes, she's got to talk about it, because it's clearly whenever you see an email and they're all caps, you realize they have written in the nick of time, because something awful could happen.
Margaret asks, when do you draw the line with partying? When do you draw the line with overnight guests? How can you enforce that line anyway? And a few people wrote in with questions about overnight guests. It's a good idea to set rules about overnight guests as soon as you move in together. And sometimes people complain that a roommate's boy or girlfriend has, for all intents and purposes, moved in rent-free.
Yeah, that's a very big and a very, very common problem. Especially in with young folks who are just starting to live and date seriously. And I think it is pretty useless to make rules in advance. It's helpful. I mean, it's great to have discussions about these things, but the rules aren't. I mean,
life intrudes.
Yeah, exactly. Let's say you and I made some rules, Leonard, and the very next day you met the woman of your dreams, that rule is going to pale in comparison. So maybe better for you to bring the woman into our lives together, and then you and I can figure out some ways to minimize its impact on me, or maybe to reallocate some costs, assuming everybody is, a person of good faith. We should be able to do that.
Well, can we say to the roommate, your boyfriend is living here rent-free? How about him chipping in?
Yeah, I think that's entirely.
Because they're splitting it only two ways, have somebody here.
I mean, I don't think that. I think that, there's a difference between somebody staying over once a night after they'd been to a show that went late and blah, blah. But it's a different thing if somebody's there five nights a week or all weekend from Saturday, Friday until Monday morning, every weekend.
And along these lines, Rachel in Astoria writes, my roommate's boyfriend thinks it's appropriate to walk around in his boxers. I thought it would only happen once or twice, but it's been over a year. How do I ask them to cover up? Do I ask him directly, or do I bring it up with her?
That's a really good question, because, I mean, I don't think I would walk around with boxers, but I might walk around with boxers and a t-shirt. And so if it was bothering someone, I'd certainly like to know. And I bet Rachel could say it to me in a way that wouldn't. I don't think this is like when you want to reprimand somebody else's child, it's smarter to tell the mother or father about it. I think this guy's an adult, and so he could hear, it'd make me more comfortable if you wore a bathrobe, or maybe she doesn't want him in any loungewear at all. She wants him in a shirt with a collar and trousers, and she should be as, specific as is reasonable.
But boxers are provocative.
Do you think?
So, yeah, people walking around in their underwear.
I guess.
If he walked around in a swimsuit, it might be different, even though it'd be the same length.
Exactly.
My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column for the New York Times. Also has a book on social cues called Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. The topic is, how do you live peacefully with somebody else?
Exactly.
We're back with Philip Galanis. He writes the Social Cues advice column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times and has a book out as well called Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. The ostensible title here is Roommates, but that can mean a lot of different things.
It can.
You just got one?
I just got an email for our show that is from an older woman who lost her home in the financial crisis of 2008, and she was finally the house was taken from her in 2010, and since then she has been living with her son and daughter-in-law, and it is really, really rocky. And her issue is that she says things in temper that she wishes she didn't say, and she was looking for some advice about with that problem. And I actually think it's a problem we all have. I mean, living together, living closely with people, inevitably there are going to be explosions. And so what do you do? I mean, you need a do-over. You need to go back to them. You need to – I hope this woman will apologize if she's speaking in temper or, you know, cruelty or with too much sarcasm or even though I understand why she might be trying to take back some control. Here she is, a middle-aged or older person living – living with her on the dole with her children. And that's not the way we think the world is supposed to work. So I understand why she might be testy, but she's got to make it right.
Well, we got a question from a listener about whether it's a good idea or a bad idea to live with a close friend, because it can ruin a friendship.
It can ruin a friendship.
In this case, there are added things because there's a whole baggage of her being the mother of this person.
Absolutely. And intruding on the now central relationship in the son's life, and that can always be really tricky. That's not a pretty situation, but it wasn't a pretty financial crisis either.
Well, I've also heard that three people living together is a bad number because they inevitably wind up.
It's like those bad reality shows.
Yeah,
they're always alliances.
Two against one.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I'm sure that this woman is very aware of.
Yeah. The odd one out, and she doesn't have the resources for another alternative. And I am very sympathetic with why she might be upset, but still, it's got to be she's got to apologize.
We'll talk about apologies in just a moment. Robin, hi, you're on the air. Robin from Manhattan.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
It's actually Robin and Hastings. You have two roommates.
Two roommates.
Ah.
Over 50.
Yeah.
I like to say women of a certain age.
And are things going okay?
More than okay. We're about to come to our three-year anniversary, which was going to be a very temporary situation.
I was suddenly thrown into divorce. A number of life changes happened, and Abigail happened to say, why don't you move in with me, you know, till you can get back on your feet. And
she had two dogs. Imagine her finding a place.
I love you two.
You're
already talking like a couple. I love it. You're finishing each other's sentences. It's adorable.
We are. We're an old married couple, as testified when we bought a flat-screen TV together. It was hilarious. But it's also interesting because we're at different stages in our divorce. I'm over 15 years divorced. She was fairly newly divorced. So she was still dating, and that was adorable to watch and entertaining. But I think mainly what we wanted to say is that what works for us is that we have discrete spaces to go to. We each have a room. We can close the door. And she's a morning person. I'm a night person. And I've lived mostly with other people for my 105 years of life on Earth, and I can't tell you how important that is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Michelle Obama and her husband. He's a late night person. She's an early morning person. And we've discovered that when you find that, you know, that space where you have the quiet of, for me, the mornings, and she has the quiet of the evenings, we feel like we have this oasis of peace in our lives. So yes, that really...
We're very much like the first family.
Yes, exactly.
In so many ways.
Thank you so much for calling. You know, what I should have done is insisted that roommates call in together at the beginning of this show.
It's a fantastic thing.
In some cases, I'd like to hear both sides of the argument.
Yeah.
For example, we did get, we just got a listener writing in to say, my roommate has been a friend of mine for 20 years and my roommate for 3. I'm the neater roommate, but I try not to get too uptight. However, my roommate sometimes forgets to put the milk back in the fridge for hours at a time or clean up after dinner. I'm not sure where the line is between forgetfulness and messiness, but it seems to be a little bit of both. Is there any way to get her to clean up without being a nag?
Yeah. Assuming she is an adult and has been doing this for years and years, these habits are incredibly hard to break. And I think I know I am very loath to make suggestions to other adults or people that I've lived with because I don't want to be a nag. But, you know, you really can't get what you want until you say what you want. And so
maybe it'll go bad.
Yeah. And maybe in a very clear, maybe hinting or like little funny comments are not what this guy needs to do. Maybe he needs to just sit her down and say, the last thing I want to do is, you know, be a nag. But these 3 things are really important to me. How about you try to, you know, step it up in this department? And maybe it'll work. It probably won't. And you'll have to figure out a way not to be horribly resentful over something so petty.
Philip Galanis is here. He writes a social cues advice column for the Sunday Styles section of the New York Times. And his book is Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. And I'd like to believe that he's something of a regular on this show as well.
I love being a regular on this show.
And this show is The Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC, WNYC.org. I happen to be Leonard Lopate. Do you have another one? Because I have a whole bunch of things that people have written in.
Well, I have one that's just based on what the two women – I got a tweet about what the two women were just talking about. They say this is the flip side of that. It's great if you're a morning person and one is a night person and you have enough space so that the morning person is not being kept up all night by the night person. And so for that, I recommend headphones. I recommend that the person staying up all night listening to music use headphones and, you know, watch the TV with headphones, old movies, headphones. And because you don't really want to mess with your roommate's sleep, that's the fastest way to trouble.
Someone left this message, this question. When you've done something horrible to your roommate and she stops speaking to you, how do you apologize and get her to listen? It can't be a problem to have tension in the home if you're not getting along with the people you live with. Sometimes it's hard to even want to be home, and especially if you don't know how to make that connection.
Right, how to make it right. It's, of course, she's left out the most interesting part is what the horrible thing she did is. If she slept with the guy's wife or partner or, you know, I would say there's probably a long, long winter ahead. But otherwise, once we've apologized, I think we should not assume that our apology is immediately going to make everything better. Sometimes we need to apologize a couple of times, and then we need to let the other fellow have some time to process being hurt and come out the other end, hopefully.
But if you don't make the apology, you're not even starting the process.
Exactly.
Do you have advice on setting boundaries or policies about sharing with a roommate? If you eat a roommate's food, should you always replace it? Or if you break things like dishes or the stereo. I mean, how responsible are you for the things that you kind of share, even though the other person brought them in?
When we were talking about rules earlier, these are great things for roommates to talk about up front. Like, you know, I would love it if I only had to go to Whole Foods every other week and not every week. And so if our diets were enough alike, it'd be terrific to share sort of common staples. But
you pay for it this week, I pay for it next week.
Yeah, do it like that. But if you're not that kind of if you're living very separately, if you're just sharing a space for a certain number of dollars a month, I think when you drink somebody's milk, yeah, you better replace it or they're going to be angry. And if you break the little Limoges dog their mother gave them for First Communion, you better figure out how to make that right too.
I've seen people who actually wrote their names on the eggs.
I hope they're hard boiled.
Sometimes people do cross those lines.
Cross the lines, assuming.
You know, what's yours is mine, what's mine is yours, except that you have a lot more than I have.
Exactly.
Joan in Brooklyn writes, my roommate and I don't talk very much. I actually try to avoid her a little bit just because I like to have some space of my own, but I feel like I've become too antisocial and it's getting slightly awkward. How do I reach out and be more friendly without it seeming sudden and weird?
Well, I don't think you should worry about that. I think people are looking at us and our behavior a lot less than we think because they're looking at themselves and their own behavior. So knock on her door and say, I'm about to roast a chicken. Do you want to join me? Or do you want to go to the movies with me to see something? And I think that's a gesture like that. I wouldn't think that was sudden. I would think that would be, you know, nice. I'd welcome that.
Just a casual kind of thing. Now, we mentioned that these things often extend into other kinds of relationships, but people do see differences. Meredith left this message. This may be a relationship question, but how do I get my boyfriend to pitch in with cleaning like a normal roommate would? Living with a boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife is very different from living with a roommate. Do people sometimes run into the same problem?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've never heard that one about a boyfriend. It's sort of like he's gone to some old sex role stereotyping before they've even gotten married. So I think that's a warning sign. Not that, you know, you should take any drastic measures other than speaking with him about it, but the two of you are living together. That didn't make you turn you into his mother or June Cleaver or anything like that.
We have a call from Sam from Brooklyn. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's going well. What about you?
All right, so this is
sounds to me
of,
like you have a problem with your roommate.
I love this. Okay, go, Sam.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So I have a funny story for you guys. I live with three roommates. I'm almost 30 years old, and I'm an actor, so I live with roommates. That's what you do in New York. And I have one roommate. She's also close to 30, but she works in food service and parties like a rock star. And I'm a morning person. I get up, I listen to Morning Edition, and I juice vegetables. And there's one night, it's Wednesday night. She comes home 3:30 in the morning with, like, maybe five friends of hers and just blasts music and turns on, you know, hard rock and roll and starts drinking, just being incredibly loud. And I get up at 6 a.m. I've been living with her for years, and it's just, you know, I've been a nag, and I don't think this will work for most of your customers, but I walked out butt naked, cracked a beer, sat down with them, and became the life of the party. It was absolutely hilarious. Now we're like best friends, and she says she'll never do that again. She figured out I was serious.
So what you did is you outrageous them.
I tried to shame them, but it didn't work. It just made us friends.
Well, but it finally did work. Is it okay now? She comes home sober?
Well, she doesn't turn the music on.
Well, see, thank God for small favors. That's a great way to go. Provocation can be really great if it's done with people of good faith and it doesn't fall flat.
Bonnie left this question on her show page. I'm not sure, but I have a roommate who might be in contact with bed bugs, and I may have introduced them into my apartment. Now they are a problem. I just don't know what to do, whether it's my roommate or they're just so common in New York that they have a way of getting into anyone's apartment. My roommate is neat, clean, tidy, doesn't abuse anything. I'd hate to confront him to find out later they have spread throughout the building through some other access point, or even that I might have introduced them myself.
Yeah, I think that you're halfway to analyzing the situation perfectly, that in a situation where there are bed bugs in the apartment, who brought them there is not the immediate problem. The response plan about getting in touch with your landlord, coming up with a way to get rid of them. In New York, it is so easy. A gym bag in a locker, anything at the laundromat, that sort of thing. Unless you have a real reason to think that he brought them, like I was just staying at my mother's apartment and God, there were bed bugs everywhere. And then you had bed bugs next week. I think you're better served to just focus on getting rid of them.
Do you think that the things we've been discussing, many of them apply to office mates as well?
I think they apply to office mates. But who I think they apply to even more? Neighbors. I get tremendous number of neighbors questions. Office mates are, well, the office mate questions that are coming in now are running so heavily political, as I was saying before.
Because you have written about office mates who are much too loud and sorts of things that we've been discussing
here. The disgusting habits.
Who leave their food all over the place.
Absolutely. It's a terrific – I mean, whenever we are shoved together with people in small spaces, we have the roommate problem.
And then you mentioned politics. I'd imagine that would extend to roommates as well. If roommates turn out to be supporting different candidates, have different philosophies of life.
My favorite one that came in from roommates, and they were sharing, they were Californians, and they were sharing a house. And one of the roommates put those lawn signs for a candidate that the other roommate really didn't support. And rather than confront her about it, the other roommate just removed the signs in the middle of the night. And a war ensued that they wanted help in brokering.
Well, this is a perfect way to go out in this discussion because you're going to be coming back to our show before the election to talk about political discussions and disagreements.
I am looking forward to
among friends, family, and whoever else. Philip Galanis, he writes the Social Cues advice column for the Sunday Style section of the New York Times. His book, Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. Thank you for being here.
It is always a pleasure to visit you, Leonard. Thank you.